Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal, and I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage. We're going to talk everything Rebels and Bulldogs for the next half hour or so. We'll catch you up on how football season is going. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good, Parrish. I've got two weekends off in a row, sort of, so I really don't know what to do with myself. I mean, it's, you know, this time of year, you just don't have a whole lot of time off on the weekends, and here I am back-to-back weekends where I don't have to cover a ball game, so this is kind of nice. I may get lazy over these last two weekends or something.
Well, that'll change for you when you get on the road to Provo next week. That'll be a nice
2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Gosh, it's coming up. When is that game?
It is on 7 days. So the 15th. Yeah.
Is it okay?
I had to do it like seven. You know, because I knew the Auburn game was October 8th, so I had to add 7 to that.
That's right. Well, we're going to talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss here. As we get going, folks, before we do, I want to remind you about some other Daily Journal productions to look for. Check out The Memo, our news podcast, 3 times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And be sure to check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That comes to you every Wednesday with Gene Phelps, Blake Morgan, and Brad Locke as well. And remember, we're here for you most Thursdays, certainly one time a week with Double Coverage. Sometimes the schedules kind of dictate the how and the when. But we're going to be here for you talking State and Ole Miss as well. Let's jump right into it, Logan. Let's start with the Bulldogs. We'll get to Ole Miss, the Rebels. A 45-14 win over Georgia. State had the win at UMass. Logan, I know you were not there in person, but what's the vibe around this team coming out of that game?
Well, I got to make a correction, first of all. I told you wrong. It was the 14th. I forgot State's playing on a Friday night. Might as well be the 15th because they kick off at 9:15.
Yeah,
it'll
be applicable for sure. So
gotcha, but yeah, I mean, Mississippi State goes up to UMass. They played in the Patriot Stadium up there at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, and just to look, you know, like I said, it was really weird for me to sit there and watch a game that I watch a team that I cover on TV. I just, you know, I haven't had to do that very often. I mean, I think the only game that I've actually missed since 2007 was the transition between myself and Brad Locke a few years ago when Brad had his last road trip to Houston to cover Mississippi State and Oklahoma State. And, you know, I stayed back, and then I picked up the coverage the following week in week two that year. I think that was 2013, I think is when that was. But anyway, yeah, you know, it's just a really bad atmosphere from what I saw on TV. I mean, they announced 13,074 fans showed up there. It didn't even look like it was that many. And, you know, in a 66,000 seat stadium, you know, it's just, it looks like, you know, kind of when those high school teams play at a big venue like that. It's sort of what that looked like. You see some of those state championship games in some big stadiums, and, you know, they only have a small spattering of fans throughout the whole thing. It's just really not the atmosphere that I know that Mississippi State was accustomed to. I don't know, you know, what UMass is, you know, I don't know what their attendance is usually like, but Mississippi State, it had to be a downer to go up there. You know, obviously the players were excited about playing in an NFL stadium like that, and playing in the Northeast for the first time in 30 years was a pretty cool experience for them too, I'm sure. But, you know, for the game itself, it's kind of about the same way Mississippi State's played all season long, kind of up and down. In this case, it was down and up. They only scored one touchdown in the entire first half, and that was just like right before halftime. They go into halftime losing that game, 14-13, and come out and score 28 points in the third quarter. So it's another one of those situations where Mississippi State plays bad for one half and plays really good for the second half, or vice versa. They just haven't been able to put a full quarter game together, and that's something they've been working on this week because, you know, just for example, during that UMass game defensively for Mississippi State, UMass had 14 drives in that ball game. In nine of those 14 drives, UMass totaled 9 yards. That's an incredible defense. I mean, that's what would make Mississippi State one of the top defenses in the country. On those other five drives, though, they gave up 380-something yards and 5 touchdowns. So it's just like, you know, from one extreme to the other, there's really no happy medium for this team. And, you know, this week they're concentrating on what they're doing well and trying to get that effort the entire game. And sometimes that's hard to do with the young football team that Mississippi State has right now. And it's just kind of – it's showing some of the time. I mean, they've got some talent on that team, and you can – and that's showing at times. But other times, you know, they're showing their experience and their youth on that team. So, you know, this week they're focusing on some of the fundamentals and techniques and just trying to get that four-quarter effort from this team because that's been a problem for the entire year. I mean, you look back at the first two games, State comes out on fire, you know, looks really dominant in the first half and then lays an egg in the second half. In the LSU game, it was right the opposite. State looked terrible in the first half and then, you know, outscores LSU and shuts them out in the second half and plays really well offensively in the second half. So it's just been one extreme to the other for Mississippi State, and they've really got to get a four-quarter effort, especially, you know, because the schedule doesn't get any easier during the month of October and November.
I hear you mentioning effort here. Is that what this is mostly about, or are there other things that are causing them to be inconsistent? I mean, where are they in terms of picking up and learning and knowing where they need to be and where they need to fit in that 3-4? That's a little bit of a different change for them.
Well, I don't really know what it is, because even on looking back at the UMass game this past weekend, their wide receivers were covered on all of those touchdowns. It was, you know, I think it was 4 out of the 5 were touchdown passes or something like that, and you know, the guys were covered. They just went up and made unbelievable plays. Mississippi State's players were right there to make the play. They just didn't make the play. And that was the case in the South Alabama game as well. You know, the guys were covered, but when the ball was in the air, the offensive player made the catch. You know, there wasn't anybody there to prevent the play from being made. They were in position, but they didn't make the play. So it's just being in those experiences and finally getting the job done. And, you know, they did have some encouraging things happen. I mean, they had Jamal Graham returned an interception, you know, a pick six, 38 yards. And that really kind of gave Mississippi State some separation there in that third quarter against UMass. But they ended up with 3 interceptions against UMass this past weekend. They only had 1 interception on the season coming into that game. So, you know, they're starting to create some of those turnovers. And, you know, the defense is playing really well at times, just like I mentioned a while ago, but there's other times where they don't look very well. And some of the things that could give them a boost, they're supposed to get two seniors back, two guys that were supposed to start on that defense. Will Coleman, a senior, he plays that Viper position, the outside linebacker, hybrid defensive end spot. He was coming into the season projected to start at that position. He's been out since the first day of fall camp with a back injury. So he's supposed to be back for that Auburn game next week. And then also senior cornerback Cedric Giles, who's been out with a broken hand since fall camp. He's going to be back for that Auburn game too. And, you know, that's going to give that defense a little bit more experience, some guys that have been out there and been through the battles. So that's going to help boost that defense and give them some more experience out on the field.
Well, the theme of the week last week for Ole Miss was finish. You know, they had played 3 games, and in 3 games they had yet to defeat an FBS opponent. They had beaten up on Wofford a little bit, but, you know, so much was made of the Rebel schedule at the beginning of the season. A really kind of brutal September with Florida State and Alabama. You know, they had a chance to win both of those games. They had big leads. They lost both of those games. So what they wanted to do against Georgia was finish the game strong. And we really, against Georgia, saw what this Ole Miss team can be when it doesn't turn over the football. Turnovers really, you know, kind of fueled the comeback for both Florida State and Alabama. Alabama, you know, Logan, you look at that game for Ole Miss last year, in Tuscaloosa, Ole Miss needed those turnovers to beat Alabama, had to have them. This year, if they don't turn over the ball at home, they beat Alabama by two touchdowns. You know, you look at that game, Alabama had three non-offensive touchdowns, two with its defense, and then one on a punt return. If you take the non-offensive scores out of that game, because Ole Miss also had one, then Ole Miss wins 36-27. So, you know, they wanted to see what kind of team they could be if they held on to the football and played well. You know, you mentioned the four quarters for Mississippi State. Ole Miss needed that as well, and they got that against Georgia. I guess actually it was a three-quarter game because those starters didn't play in the fourth quarter. But they came out very strong, had a defensive touchdown again with Derek Jones picking off a pass and running 52 yards to the end zone. And, you know, that's an interesting story there. A senior, a converted wide receiver. He had played cornerback some earlier in his Ole Miss career going back to 2013. But, you know, he'd been away from it a long time, and now they're very thin at the position, at least in terms of experience. So he's getting some snaps there, and evidently he's picked things up rather quickly. And it was big for them to see him make a play like that. But it was bigger to see Chad Kelly protect the football. Kelly had the fumbles and the interceptions. I'm thinking maybe five or six turnovers total in those first two FBS games. He was turnover free against Georgia. He completed 75% of his passes. So a big game for Chad Kelly. And really, you saw the depth of those Ole Miss receivers kind of show out when Chad Kelly threw 55 yards through in the air. We're not talking catch and run here, but through to the end zone, 55 yards to DeMarcus Lodge, who was in coverage, and Lodge gets physical with the Georgia cornerbacks, makes the catch in the end zone, a huge play in the game there, one of many. But it just shows the depth of those Ole Miss receivers. You know, Logan, this is a really talented group, and you know, Ole Miss may not have an all-SEC receiver at the end of the year because of the way Kelly spreads the ball around and they use so many different receivers in that offense. Now, they may have the all-SEC tight end. Evan Engram right now leads the nation among tight ends with receptions and receiving yards, so he's been a huge part of this team. There's a big comfort level between Kelly and Engram, and he goes to him often. I would be very surprised if he's not your all-SEC tight end, but there may not be that many postseason accolades for the receivers just because none of them are being used in the way that Laquon Treadwell was last year. All of them are getting their chances, are getting opportunities, and most of them are really capitalizing there. It's a very deep and talented group. So we saw what Ole Miss could do when it did not turn over the ball, you know, and they were playing against a Georgia defense that was fair. You know, it wasn't Alabama, it wasn't Florida State, but most of the SEC is not going to be Alabama. You know, there will be some stronger defenses the Rebels will face. LSU and Texas A&M come to mind, but this has been a very explosive offense, and when it was mistake-free, as it was against Georgia, it really, really, really was impressive. Still kind of erratic in the run game. Devon Penniman, the freshman who's getting more looks and more time now, he had a nice game. Scored in the red zone. The Rebels had struggled there, but he had a one-yard touchdown run when they were in kind of a goal line package with backup quarterback Jason Pellerin. A physical, athletic guy. They've shown that several times, and they scored with it twice against Georgia. So I would think Devon Penniman is someone to keep an eye on. I think he'll continue to see his role increase. Looks like he's becoming more comfortable. And a couple of guys to watch for Ole Miss defensively, Dietrich Bing Dukes. You know, the middle linebacker spot has been a question mark for Ole Miss. They missed their top target in recruiting, a five-star guy, Mike Juarez, who eventually signed with UCLA, his hometown school. The Rebels were hopeful that they would add him to their class. They did not, and really didn't have a big answer there at the middle linebacker position after the departure of C.J. Johnson and Christian Russell, two seniors from last year. There was no star waiting in the wings. Part of the plan included DeMarcus Gates at middle linebacker, but this defense is strongest when Gates is on the outside, and they've kind of committed now to putting Gates at outside linebacker, and one reason they might be able to do that is Bing Dukes, a junior college transfer, a guy who came into the class late in March. You know, they thought they were going to solve this position with Rommel Mungeo. I'm really struggling with that, but I'm pretty sure it's Mungeo. Rommel Mungeo, the grad transfer from Oregon State that we've talked about here before, he just has not caught on and been as productive as they thought he would be. They thought he would kind of rise to the top there and overtake that position, but it's been Bing Dukes, a guy who kind of had a bit of an odd route to Oxford. He thought he was going to be a December graduate from Iowa Western Community College. He signed a letter of intent with Middle Tennessee State, actually. Well, he did not graduate. That made his letter of intent null and void and reopened his recruiting. So Bing Dukes, a former Georgia player who left Georgia in search of playing time and transferred to Iowa Western, he's back on the market. The Rebels signed him, but he was, you know, when they got Mungeo in the fold, really Bing Dukes was a little bit of an afterthought, maybe a guy who was going to provide some depth, maybe a little bit of a project player. He had seven tackles against Georgia, his former team, played really well. They're looking for somebody to fit those run gaps and not have assignment busts, and that was something that he was able to give them against Georgia and finish with seven tackles. He's number one on the depth chart right now at middle linebacker, so maybe that's going to be the rotation there. It looks like Bing Dukes, then Mungeo, and maybe a little bit of Willie Hibbler there, the sophomore who moved over from tight end. So anyway, that's what it's looking like there at middle linebacker. Keep an eye on Bing Dukes, and I'm believing that Hibbler is a redshirt freshman, not a sophomore. Another guy to keep an eye on for Ole Miss who looks like he may be coming on, and it would be a very good thing for the Rebels if he does, is freshman cornerback Jalen Jones. Again, a position hit with a key injury on opening night with the loss of Kendarius Webster, the Rebels' best cover cornerback. Add to that the fact that Tony Bridges, a junior college transfer last year when he started 10 games, has kind of gone backward, just not doing the things he needs to do to get on the field, so lacking production there from a guy that played a lot last year. All of a sudden, you've got a lot of young guys that they're counting on. Jalen Jones, a freshman, is one of those. He had six tackles, a forced fumble, and a pass breakup against Georgia. Keep an eye on Jalen Jones and see if he can continue that progress. So the Rebels are taking on Memphis this week. We'll talk about that, Logan. Let's get back to Mississippi State. Looking ahead at the Auburn game, you know, you've talked about four quarters, you've talked about effort, but you know, are there specific areas that the Bulldogs need to clean up in advance of this game?
Well, the secondary has been an issue that, you know, I mentioned earlier. The secondary has just been a problem for them all year. They really need to improve on third down on offense. It's really a main thing that they've got to work on that side of the ball. State right now is last in the SEC converting third down. They've converted just 15 to 52 third downs this season. That's 28.8%. I mean, that's terrible. So they've done a good job creating third down, you know, third and long opportunities on defense. They're one of the best teams in the SEC in regards to that. But they're also the worst team on the offensive side of the ball. In the two games that Mississippi State's won against South Carolina and Massachusetts, there's been one common theme offensively, and that's been Nick Fitzgerald's ability to run the football. He ran for 195 yards against the Gamecocks. He comes back with 110 yards on the ground against UMass last week, and he also threw for 305 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions against UMass. So a really big game from Nick Fitzgerald from that quarterback position. I mean, obviously, Parrish, you and I talked so much over the summer about Mississippi State's quarterback and who was going to take that role over. Well, Nick Fitzgerald's been their starter for four games now. he seems a lot more calm. He seems like, you know, he's not looking over his shoulder wondering when he's going to be substituted for. He played the full entire game against South Carolina. He played the full entire game against UMass. And I think it really made a difference for him, you know, just not looking over his shoulder. He's able to get comfortable back there and make the right reads. I mean, he's still got a long way to go with his passing and his accuracy, but he's coming along there. I mean, like I said, you know, completed 26 of 39 passes, 305 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Was only sacked one time. But, you know, it's the run game where he's so effective and gives Mississippi State another option back there. And that kind of creates some other plays for other running backs. I mean, running backs been a struggle for Mississippi State over the last, you know, season and a half. They really haven't had that guy since Josh Robinson back in 2014 to really take over that running back role. And it's kind of been a running back by committee situation back there. So giving them another option to run the football. They really didn't run the football a whole lot last year with Dak Prescott. It was more of a 2014 style of offense. But like I said, Nick Fitzgerald, that's one of his strengths. I mean, he's 6'5", 230 pounds. He's faster than Dak Prescott. He covers a lot of ground at 6'5". So it's an option where they can kind of exploit that. I mean, he's tough to bring down. He's going to create some positive yardage pretty much anytime he tucks the football and runs. So, you know, it's one of those situations where they've got to make sure that they have that in the game plan. They really didn't run the ball a whole lot with him against LSU, and I think that's a lot to do with LSU's defense. I mean, they kind of, you know, they saw that he ran for 195 yards the previous week against South Carolina, and so they just really buckled down and was going to make something else in Mississippi State's offense beat them. And, you know, Mississippi State just wasn't able to generate enough points, especially there in the first half, to win that ball game. They ended up losing that one by 3 points. They lost the South Alabama game by 1 point. So they're 2-2 right now, with two losses being by a combined 4 points. So Mississippi State's really close to being undefeated right now. But at the same time, they're 2-2 and facing a brutal schedule the rest of the way. So they've got to, you know, figure out what's going wrong in those situations that I talked about earlier, and that's some of the things that they've been working on this week. They are going to take the weekend off. Dan Mullen said it was really good to, you know, like I said, this team's really young, so he wanted to get this team away from football, let them recharge their batteries. They've been going since the 1st of August, so this is really their only time to take it this year, so he's just going to let them have the weekend off, let them clear their heads, and hopefully come back next week and start getting ready for Auburn.
Well, Ole Miss will have its first night game this week in the expanded Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. A lot of fans are really excited about that. 6 o'clock start against Memphis. This is the rematch after Memphis really kind of dominated Ole Miss last year in the Liberty Bowl. The Rebels got out to a quick 14-0 lead and then were outscored 37-10 the rest of the way. They struggled on offense, and they couldn't stop Paxton Lynch on defense. Lynch threw for 385 and 3. He had one interception, but Memphis was really in control of that game. Fast forward a year later, the Tigers have a new coach, and Mike Norvell, former offensive coordinator at Arizona State, and they have a new quarterback, but in Riley Ferguson, a junior college transfer who was formerly at Tennessee, but you know, still a very productive Memphis offense, but so far this production has come against a questionable schedule. The Tigers really have beaten up on some teams that aren't very good. Now they've beaten those teams soundly, as you would expect, but they come into this game with without having proven themselves. Now the early schedule for Memphis includes their biggest challenge against an FCS opponent. That was a 35-17 game against Southeast Missouri State. They beat Kansas out of the Big 12, 43-7. Kansas turned the ball over 6 times in that game, 4 fumbles and 2 interceptions. And then they beat Bowling Green 77-3. Bowling Green is last in the nation in scoring defense, giving up more than 50 points a game. Memphis had 50.5 in that game, and Bowling Green is almost last in scoring offense at 15.3 points a game, ranking number 126. So you know, you get an explosive team coming in. The Rebels want to make sure they cut down on those explosive plays, and they define those as plays of 20 yards or more. That was a problem against Florida State and Georgia, but they did not allow Georgia a play from their regular set offense of 20 yards or more. Georgia had a 29-yard gain on a fake punt, but outside of that, really no explosive plays allowed by the Ole Miss defense against Georgia. So that's something that they want to make sure they limit against Memphis. So, you know, the Rebels, you know, they were clear that this is something they want. They were embarrassed in this game last year. They started talking about this Memphis game in the final minutes of the Georgia game last week. They've said all the right things during the week. There hasn't been any trash talk, but then on Wednesday, Hugh Freeze was telling us that he was not pleased with the focus and intensity in practice, and he called out his coaches, not just his players. So he called out his coaches for not having the guys ready to practice. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how the Rebels respond against Memphis this week. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And Prep Rally with Brad Locke's Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan every Wednesday, everything high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. And we will be back with you, Logan and I, next Thursday for another edition of Double Coverage. Come and join us.